Love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
I'm guessing you guys grew up on the movie Home Alone, right?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. I knew this was going to come up. I didn't know it was going to come up like immediately, but
this is the perfect
no, I didn't
intro,
grow up
though.
On Home Alone.
Oh, okay. Is there a reason for it? It just never like piqued your interest? Did your parents never showed you?
It never piqued my parents' interest, so we never saw it as kids.
Mm.
I never got to see it until I was in college.
Oh, wow. Okay, and do you feel that your experience watching it much later in life changed your perception of the film, or did you enjoy it?
I can definitely say I didn't have all the nostalgia attached to this movie.
That's crazy. That's just, I guess, you know.
Yeah. To each year. I actually know exactly when I saw it. It was November of my freshman year of college, and I was in the middle of pledging, but our dorms, they used to have like movie nights,
mm-hmm.
right? Where they try to get like all the students who are in the dormitory to like kind of get together and watch a movie together. And one of them happened to be Home Alone. So I remember I had nothing to do that night. So I went because I was contemplating whether or not do I want to stick, you know, pledging was hard. So I was just like, do I want to be in this fraternity or not? Is this worth it? And I think we were about to enter Hell Week. So even more thoughts on my mind. And then I got to see, it's funny, right? So you get to see a lot of the torture that these burglars were put through. And I was just like, oh my God, is that what they're going to do to us? So,
oh, so it almost kind of added to your anxiety at the time.
A little bit. Yeah, I guess so.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go any further, we're talking about Home Alone today. We're talking about the first Home Alone. We're not going to really talk too much about its sequels, but we're going to talk about the latest revival of the Home Alone property, Home Sweet Home Alone, on Disney Plus.
Yeah, Disney Plus.
Yeah, Disney Plus. So let's get right into it. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality.
So before we begin, I just want to get into some old business, as, you know, I guess, since I brought it up last week. But Nico is running for Tale of the Year. Please go vote for him. This is the last week of voting when you guys listen to this. If you guys listen to this on Thursday, which I think a lot of you guys do. We do get a lot of downloads on our first day. So if you're listening to this, you have one more week to vote for Nico to be Tale of the Year. Go for it. The link will be featured in the show notes. So be sure to check it out.
And if you're on TikTok or on Instagram, find me at Nicole Pimetti, where I talk about film history in one-minute videos called You Should Watch This. I focus on old and forgotten films. And yeah, it's just an outlet for my nerddom. So if you enjoy the film history part of this show, you will enjoy that. So again, on TikTok, Instagram, at Nicole Pimetti. And now back to the show. So we're talking about Home Alone. Eddie, is this one of your favorites growing up? Would this be on like your top 5 Christmas movies list?
Yes, actually, as kind of like the list that I was cycled through for Christmas, this would be it.
Yeah, this is definitely one on repeat for me. Although if I were to present to you my top 5 Christmas movies list, Home Alone won't be on it, but Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, would be.
Ew, really? That one has Donald Trump in it.
For like 2 seconds. But other
That's too
than
long.
That.
That's too long.
I just, it's way more ludicrous. It just would never happen, but it has Tim Curry and it's in New York and they just upped everything. So I actually really think it's the far superior film.
Okay. I don't know.
He's so cute.
I don't think I've ever seen Home Alone 2 in its entirety.
Well, it's the far superior film. So
interestingly enough, I did see Home Alone 3 in theaters. I actually saw Home Alone 3 before I even saw the original Home Alone.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
How was that?
I mean, I didn't care for it that much. Neither did my mom. I guess that's why we never saw the originals.
That's funny. Well, yeah. So Home Alone, I feel like it's one of those movies. It's like Elf. It's just one of those. I can't even think. Like, I feel like Home Alone and Elf, our generation is just kind of obsessed with, maybe like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Uh-huh.
Die Hard. These are like the movies.
No,
that
Die Hard is like, Die Hard is like, you're just a try hard if you try to make Die Hard a Christmas movie.
And people do. People love it.
No, hipsters or nerds who want to be counterculture do. Like, no one really say that Die Hard is... That's like fucking saying Batman Returns is a fucking Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie.
No, it's not. It just takes place in Christmas, but it's not a Christmas movie.
So, for you, it has to be about Christmas. It just can't simply be set during Christmas. Because Home Alone technically isn't about Christmas.
I would agree. Yeah, that's why I also don't think that Home Alone should really qualify as a Christmas movie. I know it's like set in Christmas... But I don't think it's like about Christmas. Now, I think Home Alone 2, from the scenes I remember, is a lot more about Christmas than it is than Home Alone 1.
Kind of ish. I mean, it employs more Christmassy plot devices, if you will. Mm-hmm. But they're pretty equal.
Yeah, because Home Alone could have taken place at any point in time. Like, it could have been like a summer vacation. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
that's
the
right.
story doesn't change.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Technically. I don't know. Okay, whatever.
Definitely.
But point is that millennials really love this movie. I mean, I've seen so many Christmas sweaters that say Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. Like, these are, you know, deep cut references from these films that I feel like is just embedded in our Christmas pop culture.
Yeah, which is funny because someone always says it to me at least once a year. And for a long time, even after watching it, I had no idea what the hell the reference is for.
I could just imagine you like never seeing it being called a filthy animal and being like, excuse me. But yeah, it's the John Williams score, you know, everyone knows, like, somewhere in my memory.
I don't think the music is that good.
Serious?
You're just a hater. Rolando's just a hater.
I'm not a hater.
You are a hater.
It makes me so, like, that feeling, that Christmas sadness.
Aww.
You know, the Christmas sadness, but, you know, not like you're sad about Christmas, but more just like that nostalgia, that, like, you know, that homecoming feel.
It sounded just so, I don't know, like, just derivative of like every Christmas song.
I think the point that he was in that was that he was trying to, you know, be familiar to like Christmas tunes that you knew, like Jingle Bells and stuff like that, and make it kind of based off of that. So, wow. That's just, you know, someone who doesn't know anything about music theory is awfully opinionated over here.
You're right. I don't know much about music theory, but I can tell you what my gut tells me. The gut tells me it's just like, it's fine.
Well, be that as it may, I enjoy the music. Everybody knows Macaulay Culkin. reference of him, you know, like screaming and his hands over his face, mouth open, is just kind of this image that everyone knows, whether or not you've seen the film.
Right.
And I think that
it's an image that I'm sure Michael Jackson thought about a lot.
Yeah, I
that's a good one. That is a solid offensive joke.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other people who you could probably make that joke better of, but yeah.
Anyway, no, because didn't Michael Jackson and him have a weird friendship?
Macaulay Culkin himself said no, they didn't have a weird friendship. It was a perfectly good friendship. So
okay. To the eyes of the outsider, it was weird.
Let's not take the firsthand account of Macaulay Culkin into perspective here. Let's just look at it face value. A lot of people don't know this, but this film was written and produced by John Hughes, who's a member of the Brat Pack. Well, not Brat Pack. He's the writer and director of most of the films of the Brat Pack. He's an honorary member, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because he made so many of the movies, but I was going to say, I don't think he was a Brat Packer.
Yeah, he made Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Uncle Buck, and to a lesser extent, Home Alone, because he didn't direct it, but he did write it. So this is very much John Hughes' property. This was directed by Chris Columbus. Chris Columbus would go on to direct the sequel.
Discover America.
I know, right? He didn't change his name at all. Like, good for him, though. He went on to direct the sequel. He also directed Adventures in Babysitting, Mrs. Doubtfire, Stepmom.
I love that movie.
And the first two.
I actually like Stepmom, too.
The first two Harry Potters. So he's pretty big. I mean, out of all the Harry Potter films, the first two are my lesser favorites, but still, you know,
that's what I was going to say. Aren't they the lesser favorites? But it's also the source material, right? Like, you're setting up the world and like they're
kind
just
of
little kids.
What the problem with my problem with the first two films of Harry Potter is that they're too literal of an adaptation, whereas Prisoner of Azkaban adapts it better as a film. It's not a very literal adaptation of Prisoner of Azkaban. Like, every chapter is on film in Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets.
In his defense, this was the first time that they're adapting these movies, and I'm sure the studio was very, very nervous to not offend any of the readers. So I think he had like a hard.
But people love Prisoner of Azkaban and the other films that, you know, make it more stylized and stuff.
I mean, who was that director? It was
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, I'm sure the studio. I mean, the studio took a risk when they hired Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean? So. Yeah. Because I remember when I saw that one, I was like, oh, this is way different from the other ones and so much better, but...
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Maybe we're being unfair to Chris Columbus, but Chris Columbus, he's a pretty good...
I'm defending him.
Standard, maybe I am, pretty good standard Hollywood filmmaker. You know, Home Alone, when it debuted in November of 1990, it was the highest grossing live-action comedy for 21 years. It only got outgrossed by The Hangover.
What a shame.
So, yeah.
Part two? That's even more offensive.
Not even a Christmas comedy. But so, yeah, let's talk about numbers here, right? It had a budget of $18 million. This box office was $476 million it took in. So, this is a highly successful film.
Yeah.
One of the biggest, I think, most successful franchises. So obviously it would become, you know, something that Disney Plus would pick up. But I don't know.
Do you think that's true? It was one of the most successful franchises? Because, like, people know Home Alone 2. Home Alone 3 was kind of doo-doo, so. I don't know how it performed in the box office, but I don't think.
I think the first two, like, a lot of people share the opinion of me that, you know, Home Alone 2 is just as good, if not better. The third one, yeah, but I think once, you know, you have two at least good films followed by other films, it becomes a successful franchise.
I don't know if that qualifies as success.
Like,
but
Ghostbusters,
okay.
Right? The first two films are quite good. Third film, not so much. Any other subsequent Ghostbusters property. Yet, because at least the first film is so good, it's a successful franchise.
Interesting. I don't know. I disagree. I feel like for a successful franchise, one of the predecessors has to be like considered so good that like it you know, that the franchise succeeds, I think. I don't know.
Well, I guess some people would say that about Home Alone.
Okay.
Because people love the first film. I mean, you know, I love it. I think it's great. I think it's very entertaining. It's not in my top five, but I think it's very good. So the actual plot of this film is that it's really simple. A young boy is left home alone. Bam. But there's a little bit more to it.
There's a lot more to it because it's called negligence.
Yeah, so.
And Catherine O'Hara should be in jail. That's just my opinion.
Well, so the McAllister family, they reside in a suburb of Chicago, and they're quite a large family. And they have a bunch of their other family members staying with them to prepare for leaving for vacation in a couple of days during the Christmas season. I think.
To France.
Well, that's right. To Paris. In the second film, they go to Miami. He's 8 years old. He might not even be eight. He might even be 10. He's a kid. You know, he's in conflict with his siblings, in particular, his older brother, Buzz. After, you know, a scuffle with them and he ruins the family dinner, he gets sent to his room and he feels just so neglected by his family and just so unseen and not really being heard, you know, that he wishes that he would, like, his family was dead, essentially.
He's a middle child, right?
Yeah, he's definitely not the baby, but he's one of the younger ones. There's a bunch of them, though. It's not like there's just three. I think there's like five or six of them.
Yeah, yeah. I
think he's the youngest of his of the siblings.
Oh, he's the youngest of the McAllisters.
Is the kid with the glasses his brother?
But that's his cousin.
That's his cousin. I see.
But I think that was played by his brother.
It was played by his brother. That's right. I'm confusing it.
That was Kieran? His cousin. That was the one that he was afraid to sleep with because he wets his bed.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
It. Yeah.
All right. So he is the baby one. Okay. Fine. I thought it would be more funny if he was a middle child. Because I feel like the middle child is always neglected. You know.
Yeah. Well, also sometimes when you have a lot of children, and then you know you
neglect them all equally.
Yes. Or when you have your last baby and you're much older, you're kind of over it, you know, so they don't really get all the affection and built up love that you had for the other ones.
Yeah.
So there's a power outage during the night, which causes their alarms to not go off. So when they wake up, they realize that they're running late and they all leave in a frenzy and forget that Kevin's still in the attic and they left him there. Very negligent.
Again,
right?
Negligence. How do you just forget a child?
Now, of course, throughout the beginning of the film, one thing that we missed was that a character played by Joe Pesci was actually surveilling the house because he planned on robbing it with his cohort, Marv, Harry and Marv, two burglars who pretty much, you know, saw that this family was going to be leaving and intended on burglarizing it when no one was there. But much to their dismay, Kevin is there and he creates some traps for them so that they cannot rob their house, but instead Kevin can destroy his house piece by piece. So, you know, it works really great as a realistic film.
Oh, yeah, the most realistic.
It's that's why this film actually works, is that it's high fantasy. It's just this would never happen. It's really slapstick comedy. Almost like the more violent it is, the funnier it is and the more it works. And then at the end of it, because of the story about his neighbor and him judging his neighbor, you know, as like a lonely old man and actually getting to know him and having a relationship with him, you know, the spirit of Christmas, which is why I think Christmas does matter, you know, actually takes over him and he realizes to have a more open heart and to not judge people based on their covers and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Is that what Christmas is about?
I think that Christmas encourages people to open up their hearts. Christmas is the time of giving. You know, it is the season for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, people usually, you know, they donate to charity. They like to give their time, volunteer. Sometimes
these people
go to church.
I would love to beat them. Going to church, I'm actually critical of people who go to church because those are fair weather Christians, and you know it.
What are we doing here?
He's just picking apart people.
Let's focus on the movie.
So I think that the season definitely brings that out in people, and it did it for Kevin, and it actually made him a better person, according to the movie. Although 2 years later, it happens all over again in New York. But so
what does it say about the mom? You know,
played by Catherine O'Hara. Yeah, I mean. So let's talk about performances. I actually think that Catherine O'Hara is one of the strongest parts of this film. I think she's such a good actress and she really conveys this, you know, kind of to her wits mother because she's got a lot to deal with. She's got family, all these people in her house and, you know, having to discipline them and be on top of them and then trying to go away on vacation. There's no vacation for this woman. Literally, there's no vacation for this woman. She goes and then she comes back.
Right.
So
she meets John Candy.
She does meet John Candy, even though it's problematic, the situation at hand that, you know, they leave their child there. I think you actually get a good sense of the grief that she feels and you feel her desperation to get back to her son. And I think that's one of the parts of the movie that actually work because we keep coming back to her on her way back. Mm-hmm. And it's this whole thing. It's this whole ordeal for her. You know, it becomes kind of not a B plot, but a C plot of the film.
Yeah, it's like the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. And it is like the Odyssey. And it's just taken her forever, but then she finally gets to come back to her son and, you know, and they reconcile.
Which is interesting. Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, her performance is probably the best thing of this movie, if only we don't get enough of it. Mm. Right. But when I heard that there was going to be a Home Alone remake, I thought it was going to be like, okay, maybe they'll do something new and they'll finally tell us a story of like her point of view and we get to see her adventure. Because I would love to see her trying to make it from France to Chicago.
Tokyo.
No, Tokyo.
Which is the new one.
That's a new one. Okay. France was the original.
You're talking about the sequel.
And the sequel, Miami, apparently.
Miami, yeah. And it was like raining the entire time.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying. No, great performance on her part. I mean, great performance also from Macaulay Culkin, though.
Yeah, another one. So, you know, this shot him into superstardom. So much so that, like Rolando mentioned, he befriends Michael Jackson. I think before Home Alone, he wasn't in that much. I think that was his first film.
Oh, he wasn't in My Girl?
That's right. You're right. He was in My Girl.
Yeah, My Girl predates Home Alone, I think.
Yeah. No, My Girl does not.
Oh, it does it. Okay, no. Well, there you go.
I mean,
I know him more so as a child. I know him more from
that,
Girl, not Home Alone, because that's a movie that I saw.
Yeah, he was in the two Home Alones. He was in My Girl, The Good Son in 1994, Richie Rich, The Page Master.
Oh, I take it back. That's a movie I know him, my whole family. That's a movie we loved as a family that we would watch. Now that, not a Christmas movie, but it is a winter movie, and I think that should count as a Christmas movie.
Which movie?
The Good Son.
The Good Son. Yeah, right. That should be one that the family cozies up by the fireplace to watch.
That's what we used to do growing up. We loved that movie in my household so much.
What an interesting household. So he definitely, yeah, he was only big in the first couple of years of the 90s, and then he just kind of disappeared. So he's very much a product of the early 90s. He was very much everywhere.
He disappeared on his own accord, kind of, though, did. Right? Like, yeah. He kind of didn't want the fame. I think he hit some hard times, but, like, he kind of cleaned himself up, and I think now he's, like, kind of, you know, I mean, considering, for a child star, I think he's alive, right?
That's right. He is alive.
That's a very low bar, but let's be honest. Like, child stars, like, have a tragic track record.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he said that his father was cruel and violent in his childhood. Mm. And he said that he felt his father was jealous because everything he tried to do in his life, I excelled at before I was 10 years old. Right. So his father kind of.
Well, now it sounds like Macaulay Culkin is adding to that fuel by saying a comment like that. Because if I said something about my parents, both my parents would have kicked my ass, you know?
Well, yeah, but Macaulay Culkin pays for everything for his father, that's so fair. He could cut him off like that. So dynamics change there. But yeah, so apparently too, you know, like there were some drug problems within the family and stuff. I know one of his sisters died from it.
No way. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, his half-sister, Jennifer Adamson, died of an overdose in the year 2000. And you would never tell. I mean, this as a young boy, you know, he's going to be forever immortalized, I think, and with his portrayal of Kevin McAllister in this film. I mean, he's just so wholesome, so charming. And you don't kind of like, I don't know. It's hard because I feel like people aren't that responsive of child actors. I think people tend to be a little bit more critical in general of child actors. And they don't want to give their heart over to a child actor that they do someone their own age. It might be a weird, bitter jealousy thing.
I'm having trouble following. What do you mean?
I feel like people are not receptive to child actors. Like Haley Joel Osment, right? A lot of people liked to make fun of him. Other child actors that you could think of. But it's easier to make fun of and not, like, enjoy child actors than it is, you know, a regular, an adult actor.
I think the boys have it harder than the girls.
I guess. I mean, they all have it pretty equally.
Look at the Olsen twins. I mean, they're billionaires, so.
Maybe.
Is McCulkin a billionaire? No, but his brother is on the show Billions, I think.
Succession?
Oh, never mind. Not Billions. Success. I confuse those two shows. They basically
they're pretty similar, yeah.
Like the same thing.
Yeah. Point is that he's really good in this movie. I think he's great.
Is.
Yeah.
I think he is great. He's adorable. I also enjoy Joe Pesci in this movie a lot.
I think Harry and Marv are absolutely fantastic. I think Joe Pesci even said that, you know, he wanted to play it like he was a Looney Tunes character, which I think works really well. You know, like when he's like cursing to himself and like, mana, 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 like he's saying nonsense, you know, it's very that cartoonish.
Dog. Mm-hmm. It's that dog from, it was in the Scooby-Doo movie. Dick Dastardly's dog. I forgot his name.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what he does. Like anytime he's like, brruh, 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 brruh.
Yeah.
Rackish.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the guy who plays Marv too, we just talked about him last week because he was the narrator for The Wonder Years. So if you listened last week, the narrator of the original show of The Wonder Years is who plays Marv. Mm-hmm. And he's taller. He's more dim-witted than Harry. He's not the mastermind. And I think he even gets some of the crueler things happening to him. Yeah. He's got like this high-pitched scream that he does in both films. It's just, he's a really good physical comedian, I think. He knows how to work his body into his comedy really, really well.
Agreed.
And I think that this movie's, it holds up. I think it's funny.
I mean, considering I've only seen it like twice in its entirety, and the second time rewatching it, I was just like, yeah, this is a solid movie. This is a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't like Christmas movies in general, but it's not like a movie that I rewatch for the holidays.
Well, yeah, you don't like Christmas, so it would make sense.
I love Christmas.
I was going to say, because you seem to hate all Christmas media, so I'm surprised.
I know we talked about this on the podcast. Like, one of our most listened to episodes was the Christmas music episode.
Yeah.
And, like, I made it abundantly clear I don't like Christmas music. I guess I don't like Christmas movies that much, except for Muppet Christmas Carol.
Obviously. Oh, yeah, that's one of the like best, the, yeah.
But that's just a good fucking movie.
Hell yeah.
How it didn't win an Oscar that year, I don't know.
I know, right? Yeah, especially because that music is so good.
But no, yeah, this is this movie, I agree with you, this movie holds up. I think the performances are great. I have yet to see that Netflix special, Movies That Made Our Childhoods, or whatever it's called. But like, apparently the Home Alone episode is like supposed to be bomb. Mm. So if you guys have seen it and know like any of like those deep, dark secrets that they reveal there, hit us up. Let us know. I'm always down to learn. Maybe I'll just watch it one day. Who knows? I don't know.
I might watch it after this. Yeah. Do you know what a Rube Goldberg machine is?
Are those the machines that are like perpetual?
Yes. Chain reaction type machine or contraption intentionally designed to perform a simple task.
I think it was perpetual motion.
Oh, yeah. In an indirect and overly complicated way.
Like those dominoes, like when you drop dominoes, basically.
Yes. Yes.
And so, okay.
Yeah. So, no, because I was reading Roger Ebert's review of this film because he did not like it. He gave it two thumbs down, and he compared the elaborate booby trappings in the film to Rube Goldberg machines.
And he said,
they're the kind of traps that an 8-year-old could devise if he had a budget of tens of thousands of dollars and assistance of a crew of movie special effects people. So,
okay, I don't think Roger Ebert knows what a fucking movie is.
he called it highly implausible. And I guess one of the things that is very overly criticized of this film is, one, the implausibility of everything, and two, the excessive violence of it. Do you think that this is something that people should, that this is something we should be talking about, or people just need to get over it? Because at the end of the day, it's a comedy.
Yeah, but it is hyper-violent.
It is very violent.
I mean, I don't think a lot of people usually don't survive a 2-story fall of iron on your head. So I feel like he should have died, right? We sometimes don't see it. And I don't know. I'm not saying that doesn't make this movie bad for me. What I am saying is that it doesn't. I don't know. I'm not going to hold it against the movie because it's not the movie's responsibilities, you know, to lecture our children about violence, right? Like, that's the responsibility of the parent. I don't know. And I also didn't see this as a child, so I didn't have that fantasy as a little kid of like making these elaborate traps to like hurt my family or whatever, or potential robbers. But I don't know. Like, was there like an influx of like kids hurting their siblings or something after this movie?
Yeah, so that's interesting. I've never really read a report about that. If there is one, or if people, you know, who were of an older age when this came out can remember anything like that, please do share it with us. For me, I guess because it's a farce, because it's highly, it is kind of implausible that all of this would happen. I think that's why it works, because it's like, oh, this would never happen, right? It's kind of like, oh, what if it could, right? Like I said, it's the fantasy of it. But I don't know if it should be ignored. You know, it does show that when children watch excessive use of violence, they're able to internalize it more and put that behavior in their own life. So that's something that we don't want our children to exhibit. And obviously, maybe then you should. But that's, like you said, it falls on the parents. Have a conversation with your child. Don't just let them like take in all of this media and not discuss it with them. Not let them actually like break it down within themselves while they internalize it. So
I wonder if I'm a parent, when I'm a parent, if I'm going to practice what I preach, you know, like when I show my kids Quentin Tarantino, do I tell them, well, it's just a movie, so don't worry. It's okay.
How young do you plan on showing your child?
I don't know. I want to. How old was the little child in Kill Bill? Because that qualifies as a kids movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was a 4-year-old child.
Oh well, no, that's too young. Maybe like 6.
I think that's how long the bride was in a coma for, like 4 years or something like that. So okay, she couldn't have been anymore.
Six years old.
But yeah, so highly successful film. Obviously, it's going to generate some sequels, which it did. Home Alone Last in New York in 1992. Home Alone.
Yeah, how long? That was like, what, 2 years?
That was only 2-year difference. They just jumped on it. Home Alone 3, 1997. Let's see.
And then there was like a couple of direct to, yeah, yep, like Home those Alone are direct 4. To DVD or direct to VHS, yeah. I think.
Home Alone 4, Taking Back the House in 2002, and that was not released on in theaters. It was a television film. And another television film, The Holiday Heist in 2012. And now we have this film. So this wasn't released theatrically, but it was the first to be released on a streaming platform.
What the hell was The Holiday? Oh, is it Home Alone, The Holiday Heist?
Yep.
I thought it was just The Holiday Heist. I'm like, I don't think that... that sounds like a whole different thing. Okay, got it. Yeah, I guess they really stick to the Christmas thing, huh?
Yeah, well, that's part of the charm of the film, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, if it was set in the dead of summer, though, it wouldn't have the same allures to it. And then the
I
whole,
guess you
like,
can't freeze, like, that the water. Too.
But then it's also, like, the aspect of meeting a stranger who you think is a creep, but then ends up being, like, a, you know, a jolly old person. Like, that doesn't work that well unless it's Christmas.
I don't think that's true. I think that technically could work whenever.
I don't think so. Yeah, they really do. But that's the thing. It's synonymous with Christmas. Nobody's going to want to watch a Home Alone movie, a movie that they associate with Christmas, any other time of year, right? So it has to be Christmas. It's just as simple as that,
I guess.
So, Home Sweet sure. Home Alone. Rolando, can you tell us about this movie? Since I did a lot of the talking for the other one.
No, fine. That's fine. I mean, I was letting you go because I have no connection to these Home Alone films. Sorry, guys. No. All right. So Home Sweet Home Alone takes place in a suburb of Chicago. I know this because a cop's badge had like the village of Winnetka or something. Winnetka. And I had to look it up just to verify because they never actually say they were in the Chicago metro area. And I looked it up. I was just like, okay, so they are similar to the original Home Alone. Mm-hmm. I think it might even be the same town. Who knows? I don't know. But was Home Alone in actually Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, so they were in Chicago proper.
Mm-hmm. It's okay, a Chicago so this one, set franchise, yes.
Okay, well, but is it like a suburb of Chicago or yeah, is Chicago the city?
I said that, yeah, suburb of Chicago.
Oh, okay. No, that's what I meant. Like, so it's not like necessarily Chicago proper. It's like outside of Chicago. Okay, mm-hmm. Same. All right, fine. Same thing here in this film. however, in this film, we really focus more so not on the kid whose home we're going to break into. We're going to really focus now on the people trying to break into said home. This time, it is Jeff and Pam, played by Rob Delaney and Ellie
Kemper,
thank you. Ellie Kemper. And the reason they're trying to break into their house is because they think that this kid stole a doll that's worth $200,000. And this family is in desperate need of the money because Jeff had just lost his job. So thinking that the home is unattended, they decide we're going to go steal our doll back. What they didn't know was that they have a mischievous child in there who is British for some reason. And he decides to protect his house. And hilarity ensues. That is more or less the summary.
Plot. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
There you go.
So that dynamic changes, right? It's no longer like mm-hmm. this kid who feels threatened by people who are burglarizing for the sake of, you know, their own greedy intentions. We humanize these people who want to break into the house. They seem to have a more, it's simple. It's not just burglarizing. It's what some might say it's not burglarizing, but it is. But they really just want to get this one thing back, right? They have a really simple intention. The only way that they could do it is, unfortunately, to break into someone's house and stuff.
Burglarizing sounds so 1920s. I don't know why. Maybe because I heard it more so in Chicago. He tried to burglarize me. You mean the man that you've been sleeping with for a year?
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. I was like in Chicago and I didn't realize you were talking about the movie. But yeah, so, you know, it's interesting because the way that this movie begins is very kind of just like it just plops you in the middle of the story, in my opinion. And it took me a while to like kind of figure out what the who was who and why things were happening. Right. Like I was like, wait, so we're at some random people's
open house.
Why is Max and his mother at this open house if they don't live here? You know, that was one. Maybe I missed something. Did they
You must have missed something. The reason they were there was because he had to pee.
So she just went into a random open house.
So he has to pee. And she is like, well, can you hold it? And he's just like, no, mom, I had like 6 refills. I assume they were at the theater or something, because what kid has 6 refills? Again, the mothers in this franchise. So she's just like, oh, my God, and you can't hold it. So when he admits that he can, she sees a sign for an open house. And she was just like, OK, we're going to do something, but just you're going to have to follow me on this one. Just pretend that we're going to try to buy this house. So she goes into the open house so he can use the bathroom, which is the plot of an episode of Bob's Burgers. I just want to point that out.
Oh, yes, that is true. Thanks for pointing that out.
So, yeah, that's why the kid and his mom are at the house. And the kid meets Jeff. They don't get along. Right. Because the kid's kind of a little bit of a snot. He called Jeff like, oh, you look like Frankenstein. That's like a Frankenstein's monster exchange, whatever. And he sees the doll and he's just like, ew, that's so ugly. Why do you have it? And, you know, Jeff explains that, oh, they're my mother's. I'm taking care of them. And that's where he learns that maybe these dolls are worth something.
Yes. And then... This family does not want to sell their house. You know, they bought it before their children were born. Their children are now young teenagers, or at least their oldest daughter is. So they've been raising their families inside this house. So having to give up your house is just such a devastating idea for them. So they want to prevent it. So when the dad goes on eBay and sees that doll is worth over like $200,000, mm-hmm. obviously this would solve all their problems. But when he can't find it, he just naturally assumes that Max took it.
I mean, don't we all always assume that, like, when something is missing, someone stole it?
Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know. It's never simply we misplaced it.
It's never that we misplaced it, or, hey, you know, you have family that just came and is staying with you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, maybe, too, because...
maybe ask them.
The family came later that night. Wasn't the doll missing before that?
The way the scenes are ordered, because I actually went back to double check that. The way the scenes are structured is he doesn't think about the doll. I actually remember this because Eddie was watching this movie before me, and I was wondering, it's just like, when he finally checked for the doll, the value, he's just like, why didn't he do that like after immediately he heard that the doll could be worth something? Why did he wait till later? So what happened is they go to bed, then they're woken up in the middle of the night because his obnoxious brother, played by the guy who plays Jonah on Veep, I don't know his full name, but he's such a funny douchebag actor. He and his wife and child come to stay for the holidays, and now he can't really sleep because he's been awake in the middle of the night. So while he's awake, he decides to Google the value of the doll, and now the doll is missing. So his brother and family arrived beforehand. Which, I just want to point out, this was one of my beef with this movies, because I feel like a lot of the problems from the original Home Alone could be solved theoretically with technology today. So like I thought the problems of Home Alone just wouldn't happen anymore because we all have cell phones, we all have social media, we all have cameras that connect to Wi-Fi that we can like see, you know what I mean? So this movie attempts to address that, but like in its own way creates new problems. For example, if you have a douchebag brother who doesn't want to sleep in a den, it's called Airbnb, bro. You get it, and you fucking leave your snotty attitude behind. I was so mad when he was just like, oh, I can't sleep in a fucking den. I'm just like, all right, well then go somewhere else, get a hotel. Yeah. You're apparently rich.
Yeah, I think that was Dick. Supposed to, I guess, you know, show how harmless these people are and how kind of passive they are in their own lives.
Don't justify those actions.
I think that's what it was supposed to show.
Bad writing, sir. We are in the year 2021 of our Lord and Savior. And this guy, the writers here don't think, it's just like, yeah, Airbnb would probably be something that could solve this this little dilemma here. And then no doll would have gotten stolen. Spoiler alert, guys. FYI, if you haven't seen the Home Sweet Home Alone.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was never stolen. It was just misplaced by their child. That, you know, so interesting enough, this movie did have some moments where I laughed, which I wasn't expecting to do.
Did you go in here like expecting this to suck?
Yeah, and it didn't 100% suck.
No, I thought the movie was charming, to be honest.
Yeah, it was kind of charming. It was a little rough in terms of the pacing and the story. Like, it wasn't fine-tuned or anything, but overall, yeah, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, the writers here really were aiming to make this an hour and 30 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there were opportunities where you could either extend this just a little bit, give it time to breathe, but they chose, nah, we're going to keep it straight up 120 minutes in and out.
90 minutes, not even.
I'm sorry, you're right, 90 minutes. I was thinking an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah. When we meet the brother and his wife... She's walking on her heels in the snow, like, and it just like actually took its time with that joke. I found myself laughing out loud, and it was interesting because it kind of didn't rely on like fast cutting and over editing and CGI. It actually found a lot of humor. I mean, up until the violence happened at the end, it really took its humor and kind of like the simplicity and, you know, the exchanges between people and
there were a lot of dialogue. Visual gags.
Yeah. And like, that's something I appreciate.
Yeah, one of my favorite visual gags is like when Jeff is first trying to like break into the house, right? Actually, I had a couple of visual gags that I like. But he, as soon as he turns the key, he hears in his head like sirens, and he looks around, and we see quick cuts. I mean, you know, we're just saying about quick cuts, but they were used effectively here, where you see a cop car and a dog barking, and he's just freaking out, and then you see the reality, which is just a car having like some luggage on it and a poodle. Right? I thought that was a very effective cut. And then the other thing is when like his wife texts him, is like, "Where are you?" He's like, "Oh, I'm getting milk," and then like you see behind her like for some reason this obnoxious amount of milk. In a household kitchen. Did you see that? Like all that milk? Like why would a family have so much milk?
Yeah. I said to myself, I'm like, what a clever way to put your sponsorships in there.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that, but you are absolutely 100% right. Farmland,
mm-hmm.
whatever that, the Fairland, that brand of milk, they are clearly a sponsor.
Yeah.
Not very well done, I guess, because I don't remember.
Yeah, the visual gag was effective enough that you didn't think of it as, oh my God, they're putting in their sponsorship. It was like, oh wow, they have a lot of milk. Obviously, he's like going out to get milk, you know? So yeah, I definitely appreciated that too. I mean, even though you could tell when it was CGI'd and it had all this extra computer help with it, the end violence scenes were actually pretty good too. I mean, some of them made me go, ugh. Like,
which one?
When Ellie Kemper gets all those push pins in her face.
Were they push pins? I thought they were suction pins.
Were they suction pins? Because they kind of.
I thought they were suction.
I thought they were push pins.
I mean, I was curious as to, like, I don't know. I feel like Disney didn't allow pins. I think they were suction.
I mean,
because there was no blood when she pulled them off.
Well, I mean, they're so tiny that it can't really make you bleed that much. It just really has got a pinch. But I mean, come on, a fucking pool, a billiard ball to the head, that's way more violent.
Yeah, those. I mean, that was pretty, again, that's one of the ones where I saw the movie, I'm just like, Jesus, he should be dead.
Like, yeah, like that, he's dead. There's like no coming back.
This kid just committed murder.
Yeah. and that's the thing, like, this film focuses so much on Pam and Jeff that you're not really even rooting for Max to be doing what he's doing. And what he's doing also seems just kind of forced and overly excessive. But I mean, you're here to watch Home Alone or a film version of it. So you're expecting it. But plot wise, it's not really justified or makes a ton of sense.
I agree with you. And I don't know how I feel about it at the end of the day, because I actually... For me, the reason I ended up like leaning towards I like this movie was mostly Ellie Kemper's performance. She's very effervescent.
Yeah, right? She's great.
And I noticed this from her performances like through the years. From The Office, she was like a nice breath of fresh air. And the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, I just can't imagine another actress with that kind of like positive energy. And she brings that positivity here in a role that needs it, because if handled by a different actress, it could have come off as mean and bad. Here we see her struggle and her trying to like, look, I know this is wrong, but like, we need this money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I ended up rooting for her. And even Rob Delaney, which I thought I was going to hate. Right. Not that I have anything against Rob Delaney, but early in the performance, it just felt like kind of like, I've seen this before. It felt very Will Ferrell-esque.
Oh, yeah. I could give.
Yeah. But I think by the end, he kind of made it, like, I think by the end, during the violence, like, there's scenes where he's just begging for mercy, and it just, like, spoke to me, and I'm just like, okay, I believe this. I believe you. Yeah. I believe you right now.
No, absolutely. You know? Yeah. Where would I know Rob Delaney from?
So, I know the reason me as a homosexual knows Rob Delaney is because he's, like, a Twitter comedian, basically, and I think he caught the attention of the gays because he was just in a photo, his Twitter handle was like a photo of him in like a Speedo, basically.
Okay.
You probably, if you know Rob Delaney, it would be from the show Catastrophic, which is an Amazon Prime original, in which he knocks up a woman and they decide, all right, well, fuck it, let's just raise this child together.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't think I know him then. I think this is one of the first films because I definitely never saw that show, so.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I thought he was great, actually. And I think I absolutely agree with you. And I think Ellie Kemper is definitely underrated.
Agreed.
I thought she's one of my favorite things about The Office. And I don't really like The Office.
Mm-hmm.
She was great in Bridesmaids. Yeah, Kimmy Schmidt. Pretty much everything that she's in, I think she does a really good job, even though she always kind of plays the same kind of character.
Like, agreed.
We've never really seen her. She does it well, kind of like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and all that stuff. So,
right.
I definitely think that putting them at the forefront because they're so strong too, instead of some child, was a good call. But this child, Archie Yates, who plays Max, you know, he's good. He was in Jojo Rabbit.
Was he Jojo Rabbit? No, he wasn't Jojo. He was a friend. He was a friend of Jojo.
He was a friend, yes.
Oh, wow. I preferred him so much better in Jojo Rabbit. I didn't like him that much in this movie.
Well, that's because he wasn't front and center. He didn't really have a lot to work with, you know? Just didn't focus on him. It reversed Home Alone, which is the focus is the boy. And we see, like, the fact that these two burglars want to get in the house, but it's, like, these two people who want to get into the house, and it just so happens that this boy is in the house.
I don't know. Do you think... This is just me. This is just me, stream of consciousness speaking, but do you think I felt less bad for him because he was British, and for some reason I was just like, yeah, British people. Bah, I don't like y'all. Is that my Americanism coming out?
Oh, man. You would have done well in the times of the Revolutionary War. Yeah. And so because of this, too, it makes the ending just absolutely ridiculous. Now, I didn't hate it, but it was also like, this is absurd. You know, these two people, first of all, would they continue doing what they were doing with the max of violence that they were being shown by this little boy? Like, they just kept persisting. All we want to do is talk to you. And they're being ripped to shreds and persisting. So that is just one ridiculous thing after that, which is fine. You know, I'm here for the ludicrousness of it all. But then they get there and then they're like, we got to talk to your parent. It's time to wake up your grandma because this has all been a huge misunderstanding. It's like, oh, I'm alone. It's like, oh, honey, do you want to come home with us?
Oh, yeah. No, that.
That
got resolved in like a blink of an eye and you miss it, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I stepped out of the room to get myself like a cocktail to refresh my drink and I come back, I'm just like, wait, why are they all having dinner now?
What's seriously
like, I mean, what happened?
These are still strangers. They were trying to break into your home. Why would you trust them enough to go home with them? I mean, if you believed that they were going to kidnap you too, like, that's a perfect opportunity for them to kidnap you if you get into their car.
Like, the other thing is, like, how does he know that they're not lying, right? That they're just trying to get his guard down and kidnap him.
Exactly.
That was the most farcical, nonsensical part of this film, easily.
And then the movie ended like 5 minutes after that, essentially. You know, they brought him there. It was Christmas morning. They found the doll.
Oh, actually, it was I don't know. I think there was a lot more. Oh, no, you might be right.
In the morning, like, they found the doll. The mom came, brought Max home, saw that their shit was bad. And then a year later, they're all having Christmas together. Now they're family friends. And that's it. Bam. Movie's over.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were really trying to cram things in with this hour and a half. And all of that just felt rushed and just highly. And it's interesting because this whole thing is really implausible. But that aspect of it, more than the excessive violence and the situational stuff, was more so like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because even so, as I do, I watch these in the reverse order, right? But when I went back to revisit the original ending, even though they cram a lot in those last 10 minutes once the robbers are arrested, they do it in a manner that still like has time to breathe. So we're on Kevin by himself for Christmas for a little while before his mother arrives. When his mom finally arrives, we have like a beat of them kind of just loving each other, being happy to see each other before, oh, guess what? His rest of his family arrives. And now that's an even funnier joke, because you're like, yeah, if you had just waited, like we said, we would have all been here at the same time. But yeah, she was doing the maternal thing of trying to get there as fast as possible. I get it. And then after all that is said and done, then we also get the beat where his neighbor rekindles his relationship with his child. Right. And they live all happily ever after. Right. Mm-hmm. So they were able to do all that in a matter of like, I think also similar, like 5-7 minutes. But they were able to like, they weren't like, I don't know, I guess they weren't like trying to fill it in with a lot of dialogue. They were just trying to fill it in with like the actual emotions that's going on in the footage. Here they were cramming not only in a lot with dialogue, they were also just kind of like really kind of wrapping everything up. And I think it was a dialogue that ends up making it feel like kind of like, I don't know, hokey in my opinion.
No, for sure. I mean, I think the original, you know, they were able to do it in 5 to 7 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes, but it worked better because I think overall it was just a fresher script. This was the original, you know, this was the one that came up with the idea. This new one had the misfortune of having to live up to this Home Alone reputation. Because of that, it was staler. And yeah. I think that this is yet another case of if they weren't confined to being another Home Alone film, because this is very much very different from that, you know, some things might have changed, and then it actually could have been a better film because of it. So I think that this is one of those things where it's like, you know, the truth is that people want to make new and original stories, but they're too afraid that audiences won't accept it unless it has the title or is part of a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So then they end up making it part of a franchise, but it ends up ruining these original stories because they have to mold it into a part of one franchise or another.
Right.
And I think that what I'm coming to realize after doing this show for 3 years is that we should admit to ourselves that we actually want original content. And
well, then we won't have jobs.
Yeah, well, we don't get paid for this, but we should admit to ourselves that that we are dying actually for some original content, and that we don't need it to be called Home Alone or Chucky or The Wonder Years or anything like that. And we got to change our mentality of not wanting to take a chance on anything new, because we are taking chances on all these different new things, and we're being disappointed when it's not new and it's actually trying so hard to be something it's not.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, but a lot of that's going to be the studios that need to learn this lesson, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know.
You can't blame the public audience for, like, watching these things that's being thrown at them, because just like, all right, well, what else do I have to choose from?
Well, it's one of those chicken or the egg things, you know, what comes first and who makes the real decisions here? Because it's also like they stopped making less original content because people weren't watching it. People were watching all these remakes, reboots, and revivals, so they just started making more and more of them until it got, quite frankly, out of hand.
Because
Now we're kind of overwhelmed.
Lord knows that sometimes you and I are just like, we can't commit to watching this much.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know?
So now it's just like, it's everywhere, it's everything, especially Disney Plus. It's like all they do, and it's just like, you know, but it's also like, oh my God, yeah, I'm kind of insulted. It's like, do you really just think that all I can watch is just rehashes of properties I'm familiar with? Because it's like all you're offering to me. But of course I'm going to watch it. I mean, but then it's like, I don't know, it's a chicken and the egg thing, I swear.
Well, I have a question for you. Would you have watched this if it weren't for the podcast?
So I might have, because of the Christmas aspect and because I do enjoy Home Alone, I am more open to watching things that are Christmassy, because I like Christmas movies and I like Christmas content. Yeah, I probably would have. What about you?
Probably not, to be honest. I don't think I would have. I feel like Eddie who he stepped out, guys. Sorry, that's why you don't hear him for the rest of haven't heard him for the rest of his episode.
Yeah.
But Eddie, I think he maybe would have. And he liked it. I know for a fact that like Eddie ended up leaving this movie saying, oh, I liked it a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And that's also, to be quite honest though, that's also how I left watching this film too. I was just like, huh, this was more enjoyable than I thought it would. So I actually, I agree with all the points you're making. I don't know if this is the movie for that argument, only because I actually think they were able to do something new with this idea. I don't think it was executed to perfection, but I think it was the same formula while still giving me something new. And that's why I ended up like by the end of this thing is like, I liked it. You know, I didn't love it. It's not my favorite movie. I probably won't rewatch it, but it's a movie that if I had watched this with my mom, she probably would have loved it, for example.
Oh, that's cute.
You know, so, you know, I agree with you. Sometimes like properties, like IP doesn't need to be rebooted. This is probably one of those, but with what we got out of it, it's just like, okay, you kept it the same while keeping it a little fresh. I think they kind of missed the landing a little on that one, but absolutely, whatever.
I also want to clarify that it's less that I want to make this point with this particular property, and it's more of like after doing this and week after week after week feeling this way, I've come to this kind of epiphany, and where it's like all I'm getting is original content masquerading as remakes, reboots, and revivals. None of these are straight up remakes. They're not really rebooting properties as much as they're actually taking things in very different directions, in my opinion. They're more so just reviving things so that they could have the Home Alone tag to it and get the viewership because of it, you know, accordingly. So
yeah,
that's more so it's just an epiphany. So with the question of whether or not this was needed, this was absolutely not needed. And I actually, not hating it and kind of, you know, enjoying myself for that 90 minutes, still think that this wasn't needed. You know, I think Ellie Kemper's talents could have been used elsewhere, but you know, for a very unneeded property, it was okay.
It was all right. It's no biggie. No, I agree with you. I don't think this movie was needed, but like I said, I came out saying it was like, okay, that was cute. It was better than I thought it was going to be.
True. It was a good segue into the Christmas season for me. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This would have been better for next week when it's Thanksgiving, but.
But yeah, instead we're going to be covering ghosts next week. I have another quick question for you.
Yeah.
Did you at any point were you hopeful that maybe Macaulay Culkin would make an appearance?
Absolutely. Or Catherine O'Hara. Yeah. Or Harry and Marv.
No.
Instead we got Buzz. The same way. It's like but that's also like how unnecessary it was and how like nobody was willing to be a part of it. That no offense to the actor who plays Buzz, but
and what a long sequence he got. Like it's just like unnecessarily long. I'm just like, yeah, I don't need this.
Yeah, well, that was also them. Like that was like as good as they can to get Macaulay Culkin to cameo in it. To have a sequence where he's like, oh, it's my brother Kevin McAllister who's pranking me,
who is now a home security expert, right? You caught that, right?
Yeah, I caught that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So fucking in Cobra Kai, we see that the kid became a cars seller, a used car dealership owner, and Kevin McAllister sells. It's like they just have these weird mundane jobs, but it's actually a kind of a nice quality too, because it's like, oh, right, they're just average people at the end of the day, these characters.
Well, home security makes sense for McAllister, right? He's the one setting up like guns to just shoot you when you enter on site, you know?
Well, actually, there was a YouTube skit that was made a couple years ago with Macaulay Culkin. And this is the Home Alone, where he actually plays a taxi cab driver during the holidays who's sharing his trauma of being abandoned by his family twice. And that's a way more, and it fucked him up so much that, you know, he became a troubled adult. And that to me is... That makes way more sense than, you know, someone who's able to like put that all aside and be like, I'm going to be a successful adult who actually accomplishes things. So,
yeah, Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to point out, did you catch the part where they were like, the remake is never as good as the original? Wink,
yes.
Wink.
Yes.
What? I got mad when I heard that because I was just like, don't do that. Don't do that. Because
yeah, you're insulting me.
You know, like, I know you want me to think that this is clever, but like, you're only telling me a reality, right? Mm. Like, I don't know. It's trying to disguise a fact as like a joke. And it's just like, I know this. This is not like, this doesn't make you like meta. This doesn't make you smart for saying it.
Yeah, I thought the more meta thing was the fact that they're watching a remake of the film within a film within Home Alone, Angels with Dirty Faces, which actually, that might be the name of the film that they're mocking, because mm-hmm. there's a James Cagney film from 1938 called Angels with Dirty Faces. I forget. It's like guys with dirty souls or something. I don't know. They make the title very similar to the James Cagney film. So it's clearly a 1930s gangster film.
Mm-hmm.
But the film that they're watching in the new one is like a Marvel sci-fi movie.
It's like, yeah, it's like a sci-fi-ish thing.
Yeah. So that's an interesting commentary where they're like, oh, well, people won't watch a remake of a 1930s gangster film now unless it's done like a comic book adaptation or a sci-fi mm-hmm. adaptation. And I thought that was a way more interesting commentary on remake culture instead of that stupid joke.
What they should have, yeah, instead of that joke of like, ugh, the remakes are not as good as like the original. What they should have done is say, it's just like, yeah, we eat this shit up. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know what? There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, seriously.
Disney, you did it.
Yeah, live in your truth at least. Be like, eh, mm-hmm. I'm going to watch it no matter what, you know?
But yeah, but no, otherwise, outside of that, I think that was the ending and this part. Those were the most outrageous parts of this movie, in my opinion. Otherwise, yeah, this was it was fine. I think this is like a movie that most people can say they'll enjoy with their family. They're not going to love it, but you'll be like, okay, we did a Christmas movie. We don't have to do any more.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of harmless, pun intended, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, whatever. You'll forget about it in a week.
But what about you guys? Have you guys seen the new Home Alone, Home Sweet Home Alone? Or are you just fans of the original? Let us know. Hit us up on our email. Our email is remakesreboostrevivals@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Instagram, handle remakesreboostrevivals. We're also on Facebook/remakesreboostrevivals. And if you want to listen to all our episodes, since I don't think you get them anymore on the feed, be sure to visit our website, remakesreboostrevivals.com. You actually have to add the www. So www.remakesreboostrevivals.com.
That's right.
You'll also be able to find all our contact information there, including our phone number, Lauren. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Work texts. I'm reading work texts. Nicole, drop it like it's hot. What's our number?
862-248-2326. Again, that number, if you want to leave us a voicemail, is 862-248-2326. Call us. Chat with us. We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, at least leave us a voicemail. If we pick up, it's by accident.
Yeah, sorry. We don't actually want to have a conversation. So
I mean, if you catch me like and I accidentally pick up, I'll converse.
You'd be like, actually, wait, give me 5 seconds. He'll hang up and never call back. He did that to me the other day.
Wait, did I do that to you?
No, it was a joke.
Oh, my God. I thought I might. I've been known to do that. So like,
yeah,
I'm the worst.
Yeah.
I'm also the worst at text messaging with that, right? Where it's just like, let me get back to you. And then I just forget.
Yeah, that's why I barely call you up and be like, hey, Rolando, can you chat? Because I know you can't.
It's just like, yeah, if I can't, I will forget. And then I'll forget to respond back and look like an absolute dick. Like Kevin McAllister.
Wow, look at that. You did that really well. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. I brought it right back, you see. Anything else?
No, next week is Thanksgiving. So we won't have an episode on Thursday. But on Wednesday, we're going to get out our Ghostbusters episode. And we're excited to, revisit one of our earliest episodes.
Right. Yeah. Like we do with Chucky, we're doing it with Ghostbusters. And nothing says Thanksgiving like Ghostbusters, in my opinion, obviously.
Seriously, yeah.
I guess the state Puff Marshmallow Man because you use marshmallows and sweet potatoes.
Oh, that's wow.
I'm making it work.
Yeah, you really did make it work. Good for you.
Thank you.
But yeah, so it's Christmas season finally since we did this. We're kicking it off early. And we're just excited because the rest of the year, I think, is going to be exciting in terms of content. So we look forward to having you with us.
Yes. Spoiler alert. It's going to be, I don't know. I don't want to commit to necessary stuff because sometimes we have been known to change it last minute. So,
yeah, I'm just saying it's good content coming for the rest of the year. So stay tuned.
Yeah. That's fair.
There you go. And until next time, stay in original.